everybody, to Election Connection. I am Ruth Newman, and I'm here with two colleagues, Victoria Strange, who's been on my show before lots of times, and I'm also here with John Ballier. John is a DJ for our sister community radio station here in Louisville, Art FM, and it's WXOX 97.1. Right. And there's another one too, isn't there? Aren't there two frequencies?
There's another station at 100.9. It's 97.1 for WXOX, and then there's another sister station in another part of town.
Very good.
Yes.
And we're here today. It's Pledge Drive Week for our radio station, WFMP 106.5 FM. And so we are encouraging people to go to our website, www.forwardradio.org, to click on the Donate to our Pledge Drive. And you'll see a bunch of premiums there for different pledge levels. We're also having a birthday party at the end of the week on Saturday, April the 13th. And we invite all of you to come, free admission. So you can find out details by going on our website. We're going to have Charles Booker as our guest. We're also going to have a virtual visit on the big screen by a sister radio station in England.
Oh, wow.
It's the East Leeds Community Radio Station, and they are going to introduce themselves in their, what is it, Cockney?
I don't know. Yorkshire.
Yorkshire accents. And there's going to be food vendor discounts. We're having a silent auction. There's going to be birthday cake, dancing, live music. So we're inviting everybody to show up and have a ball with us.
At the Logan Street Market.
Yes, thank you. At the Logan Street Market, 1001 Logan Street. It's at the corner of Logan and St. Catherine. Although St. Catherine goes the wrong way. So I thought we would just have a conversation today about why all of us are in community radio. You know, we have different histories and we all got to the same place. So maybe we could start with you, John.
Sure.
And tell us how you got started in community radio.
Okay. My experience with community radio started when I was in law school. I went to University of San Francisco from 1969 to 1971. And it was that last year, 70 to 71, when I had sort of a slower calendar. I didn't have to go to class as often. And so I went to the radio station and asked them, I like to play music, can I get a show? They said, well, we don't really have a place for you to do a show, but what we would like you to do is, since you're in law school, maybe you could go downtown and follow some of the trials that are going on in downtown San Francisco. And so, you know, the courthouses were maybe a mile or two from the school. And so I used to go down and watch courts. And I started discovering that San Francisco has a wonderful collection of, I would describe them as radical lawyers. Basically, people who took their politics seriously and were really interested, you know, 69 to 71. That's kind of the heart of the Vietnam trouble. And it was also the beginning in San Francisco of a lot of consciousness raising. African Americans were joining together. The Black Panthers were just across the bay in Oakland. The Brown Berets and all of them in San Francisco were organizing and getting together. And because of that, there were a lot of police scrutiny of those people. And so they said, why don't you go down, follow some of these court cases, report back to us as kind of a subject being courts and trials and what's happening in court and how things are developing. And so I went down and I actually ended up recording interviews with some of the people that were key to what was happening.
Was this for a community radio station?
This was actually for us. It was the community of the University of San Francisco.
Okay.
So it started out as a student station.
Okay.
And so that's how I got started. And I did that for, you know, probably 6 months. And then I graduated and then took the bar. So after that station, then I got interested in what was called the Crab Nebulae. And that's Lorenzo Milam. And I don't know if you've heard of Lorenzo Milam, but he probably had about 14 radio stations. And the station that he had in the Bay Area was in Los Gatos, and it was called KTAO, KDAO. And the only time that he could take me on was a midnight to 3 o'clock in the morning show. So, and fortunately, I was a young attorney. I didn't have to go to court all the time. And so I could stay up until three, and I could still go to court if I had to. So it was fun, and I did that for a while. And then when I became a lawyer, I signed up for WXOX. Actually, at that point, it was Art FM. And they hadn't even gotten their tower yet, and they hadn't gotten the approval to be on the air. And so I started in 2014, and I'm now starting my 10th year.
Wonderful.
That's great.
So that's how I got into it, and that's kind of a summary.
Yeah.
Fascinating time to be in the heart of things in California. And weren't you in the heart of things then, too?
I was in a cult group. Between 69 and 71, I was in a cult group, and it had to do with the Vietnam War, actually, because my brother was of draft age, and he was also acting out and using drugs, and my parents wanted to get him into a situation where he wouldn't be drafted, so they got him into this cult group, because the cult group had a connection with the justice system, because it was called Synanon, and it was started by somebody who had been big into AA, and he became a leader, and he formed his own little cult group. So my parents got him into Synanon, and he was considered a character disorder legally and couldn't be drafted. And so I kind of just followed in his footsteps and lived there for 2 years.
Good for him.
Yes, at least he's still with us.
Yes, right? Yes, he is.
You know, what's interesting is that we've always heard about the fact that people would go to Canada to avoid being drafted. And one of the things that I don't think I really appreciated at the time was the fact that a lot of people joined things that weren't the military. They would go, for instance, to the Peace Corps. Mm-hmm. They would go to the Peace Corps in the United States, and I'm trying to remember the name that they had for it. But, you know, there were places where you could go in the United States. And
couldn't you just stay in college year after year after year? Didn't Dick Cheney get 5 deferments? And that was for his education, I think.
Well, you know, and quite frankly, when I got out of college, I didn't have a burning desire to become a lawyer, but I had a burning desire to stay in school, and I did stay in school.
Good.
And while I was in school, I actually was able to convince my draft board, which was San Diego, in a very conservative area, to grant me a conscientious objector status.
Very good.
Good for you.
And the reason I moved to San Francisco was because they didn't want me working in alternative service in my hometown, because people that knew me would know that their children were off fighting a war and I was doing something that was different than that. So I had to move to the Bay Area, and I worked with Goodwill Industries, picking up people's donations and working for Goodwill Industries for my alternative service. So I like to say that I served the Vietnam War in Oakland.
Well, yeah, very wise.
I think my original interest in the media came about after 9/11, when all the media seemed to be reporting the same news, that it was Iraq that Iraq was at fault and that we had to invade Iraq because they were involved in making weapons of mass destruction, which was completely disproven.
Yeah.
And it was then that I started to realize that everywhere I turned on the dial, on TV, they were saying the same thing, and they were interviewing the same people. You know, it was just so pablum. You weren't getting other viewpoints, and those other viewpoints and those other reports were out there, but they just were not getting broadcast.
Right.
It was sometime around then, I believe, wasn't it? That we joined together.
That I roped you into helping us get this station off the ground.
It's the buddy system.
Yes.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, I'm going to say I think my initial interest started just a little before yours, and that was the 2000 election. I'd always been pretty much into politics, but that election, when it was handed to George W. Bush by the Supreme Court,
yeah,
I just felt like that was a very dark day in America. And, you know, I just didn't quite understand the way the media was covering it. It was just, this happened. And, you know, I remember Al Gore making this very gracious concession speech. Mm-hmm. And I had been up in Ohio, in the Cincinnati area, pounding on doors because Ohio, we thought, was a key swing state in that election.
Yeah.
And so I remember driving home. I'd been up there for several days, and I remember driving home. I had a babysitter with my two little girls, and I was just crying in the car. It was just, this doesn't seem like democracy. This shouldn't be how democracy works. Why didn't we get to finish counting the votes? Mm-hmm. And then I started reading more and more about it and finding out, you know, a lot of information that was just fascinating to me. And finally, years after that election, I think the New York Times did a huge deep dive into what would have happened if they'd done a statewide recount in Florida, mm-hmm, with the standard that I guess Al Gore's team had proposed. And, you know, and there hadn't been the big glitch with the Palm Beach ballots, the butterfly ballot, which made it look like you were voting for Al Gore when you were actually voting for Pat Buchanan.
Ouch.
Yeah, that was all crazy. But that's how I got interested in media reform. And then we started going to those conferences that were put on by the group called Free Press. And they were fabulous.
Yes, mm-hmm, absolutely. Do you remember the very first one that we went to?
The very first one I went to was in St. Louis.
I was there.
You were there?
I was there.
There was one in Memphis. We all drove down
to. There was one in Denver.
We went to that together. And before that, there was one in the Twin Cities.
Mm-hmm.
In Minnesota, and I went up there with Anita.
And they were such exciting times and so inspiring. They were really, really encouraging everybody to get involved in the media. It was our moment, and it was all about the grassroots. It was how we could counter organized money by having grassroots media, you know, for the general public. And had fabulous speakers.
Wonderful workshops. And we came back and a small group formed called the Louisville Media Reform Group. I think Mark McKinley is part of the Kentuckiana Single Payer Healthcare folks here in town who are a proud community sponsor of our station. I think he was instrumental in getting that group going.
He was.
And we happened to get involved with a community radio station that had received the construction permit, which is the FCC telling you, yes, you can go ahead and move to get your station on the air, but they hadn't received the official license to begin broadcasting. And it was a small group called the Brick House, BRYCC, which stood for Bardstown Road Youth something or other, collective something. Anyway, they had kind of a lot of the people that had been involved in the effort to submit the application to the FCC had kind of drifted out of town, and the group was kind of falling apart. And so four or five of us who had been involved with the media reform group decided, well, let's try to salvage this construction permit and get the license going. So,
were they located on Bardstown Road?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of in the first block?
I think they were around Tooligan's. That was a bar, but it was somewhere in that block.
Mm-hmm.
And then they moved to a former laundromat on the corner of 2nd Street and St. Catherine, a building that probably should have been condemned, but I think it's still there. Anyway, that's where we had our meetings. Unfortunately, and it's too long a story to recount here, that effort was sort of sabotaged, and we never got that. Our little group that had been involved with that never was able to see that radio station get its license. So I swore I would never get involved with another community radio station after that experience. It was very distressing.
Yes.
But here we are.
Well, let's talk a little bit about why it is that we need funding for your radio station, my radio station, our radio stations.
You know, I found this Declaration of Ruth Newman.
All right.
This is from years and years and years, and we were going to the media reform because it was addressed to media reform. Matt Wood, policy director of Free Press, I wrote something about the Gannett ownership of the Courier Journal. Mm. I said, their ownership, as well as their intention to provide substantive services to WHAS, harms me by sharply reducing the number of independent voices and competitive news sources available to me. I've become increasingly dismayed and alarmed by the continued consolidation of our media here in Louisville. Between 1918 and 1986, the Courier Journal was locally owned by three generations of Bingham family and became the first paper in the U.S. to appoint an independent ombudsman, and it won 8 Pulitzers and became nationally renowned for its probing journalism. But in 1986, they sold it to Gannett. Mm-hmm. And to increase profit margins, the chain downsized reporting staffs across a fleet of papers. They closed their Hazard Bureau, which was the main source of news about the region's coal mining industry and had won a Pulitzer Prize. Then they went ahead and they spent $2.2 billion buying out WHAS. And this is what was happening all over the country. And then I go on.
Did anything come of this?
What?
Did you get an answer?
No, I never got an answer, no. Oh. But I did make this declaration. But what I've got in my notes here, radio started out in 1927 after World War I, sometime during that period. And it was all amateurs. It was amateurs and it was nonprofits, and it was all started by the Navy Department. And yet, it was captured by the commercial interests. It was always, always supposed to have been for the public interest. They realized what an important channel of communication radio at the time was and still is. And in the very, very beginning, they wanted it to be for the public interest. And I have a quote by Herbert Hoover. And Herbert Hoover says, "Direct advertising on radio should be prohibited. If placed in the hands of a few groups, then heaven help the public."
Herbert Hoover.
He was so right, because that's exactly what happened. There was a National Association of Broadcasters came about to represent the commercial interests, and they managed to spend millions of dollars on lobbying, and they were able to just grab the airwaves that were publicly owned airwaves that went over to the side of commercial interests, which were not interested in the public good. They were interested in making money. That's what commercial interests are all about.
They were
but the airwaves still belong to us.
Yes.
That's the thing most people don't know.
That's exactly
they're
right.
Licensed to these companies, mm-hmm. and it's too bad there's not some really stern law on the books about how the airwaves need to be used to promote the public good and serve the common interest. And there might have been at one time. This is all foggy to me now, but I know that the Communications Act that was signed under Clinton in 1996, I think.
Telecommunications
Act.
Yeah.
And that might have been the one that there used to be a limit on how many media outlets one entity or one company or mm-hmm. person could own.
Yes.
And that was slashed.
Yes, so it totally eliminated.
It eliminated
the cap on the number of radio stations a single company could own nationally. And so that's how we got Clear Channel.
Which is now something like iHeart.
It's iHeart. It's now iHeart. And it owns...
1,000.
Well, this is information I have from years ago, but it has 1,240 radio stations. Mm-hmm. This was, in 2002, across the country. And I forget how many hundreds of millions of people listen to it every month. I have it somewhere in my notes.
And I think there's another big media conglomerate that owns bunches of television stations.
Sinclair. 294 as of 2002.
And in fact, I think at one point they had sent out statements for their anchors to read on the air. So whether you were in, Utah or Kentucky or Florida or wherever else they had stations, you heard the anchor reading
the same script.
I mean, that's like propaganda.
Yeah. So John, how about WXOX? How did that get started?
Well, as a matter of fact, it was a venture by Sharon Scott, Sean Selby, and together they were the general manager and the engineer who sort of put together I guess we were online. It was basically an internet kind of a feed. And so you would broadcast onto the internet. You would have to access this through artxfm.com. And so we did that for a couple of years. I think they actually did it for longer than that. I did it for a couple of years. And then in about 2016, they got their license, mm-hmm. and then they were able to actually on Valentine's Day start WXOX. And so we've been on the FM dial since then. We've gone through all kinds of fundraising, and fundraising is important because we used that as, there was seed money to begin with, but there was continuing expenses that had to be paid. And in order to get out of what was a very small area and to actually purchase a building on Breckenridge, that was a big move. Raising the tower was a big move. But Sean Selby, who is a master carpenter, converted the interior of our station, and the facilities are just wonderful.
Yes, they
and
are.
Anytime, you can come down, or people in the neighborhood should want to come down and see it, they definitely should go to events that are open to the public and just see how spectacular it is. The intent is to have two studios and sort of one person starts on, let's say, Studio A, and then the next person is setting up in Studio B, and it's just going to go back and forth.
Wow.
We haven't gotten to that point yet, but we have two studios, and right now it's kind of the second studio is being used more as a preparatory location. It was the dream of Sharon to have this community radio station. And she's got the same start that I did. She was in Nashville, and she was going to Vanderbilt, and she was involved in the Vanderbilt station. And then from there, they went to a station that was not connected with Vanderbilt as much as just being in Nashville, and pretty much like WXOX is now. That's how we got started, and we've done it every year. We participate in the Give for Good Louisville, mm-hmm. which is probably our best fundraiser. Mm-hmm. We used to do something on our anniversary, which is Valentine's.
That's great.
Yeah.
And for some reason, because of the pandemic, we've never been able to catch up to do that again. And it seems like the pandemic has just lingered longer than any of us thought that it ever would.
Yes, but it's, I think COVID is here to stay.
Yes.
But Give for Good Louisville has really been a good source of funds for all of us.
Yeah. All different kinds of nonprofits. Yeah. It's really a great a great resource.
Sharon and Sean are just wonderful leaders.
Yeah, and not only for the radio station here, but for grassroots community radio stations all over the country, because Sharon is very much involved in the planning and instituting of these yearly conferences, the grassroots radio conferences that we went to in West Virginia.
And she wrote a book. Didn't she LPFM for Dummies?
It's Low Power FM for Dummies. I think you can get it on Amazon. Yeah, and that's really represents who most of us are, because very few of us started out as professionals. Most all of us had no knowledge at all, but we just were so upset. And I wanted to read, because we were helped significantly in our getting our radio station up by
Ginny Welch.
Ginny Welch.
Radio Free Nashville.
Nashville. And I really highly recommend this book, Fighting for Air, The Battle to Control America's Media by Eric Kleinenberg, because he has a chapter on Radio Free Nashville. And I just thought that her statement was so right on. She had so many obstacles to getting her station up, but she was absolutely instrumental in getting our station up and giving us the expertise and the inspiration that we needed to get going. She says, "We believe democracy cannot function if only a few have access to the media, and we want to be the forum for the voices, the viewpoints, the people, and the music that have historically and consistently been denied access to the media or misrepresented by the corporate media." So we really are grateful to Ginny Welch. When we were first starting out and didn't know anything about anything, and speaking of fundraising,
yes, time for a plug.
It's time for a plug. And we really encourage you guys to go to our website, forwardradio.org. You can also support WXOX if you want, because we were both here in town to be grassroots, to be open to the public, and to be encouraging the voiceless, people who are not represented in the media, to come on and use our equipment and our frequency as your magnified voice. So go to www.forwardradio.org, click on the Donate to Our Pledge Drive link, and you'll see a bunch of premiums. And see if you can, you know, up that amount. I haven't checked to see what's on there.
We are a very, very efficient in terms of our how we operate the station. It only costs about $20 a day to operate our station, amazingly enough, because all of us are volunteers. Mm-hmm. And we happen to have, you know, an affordable rent for our little studio.
Fingers crossed
that it continues that way. But we do have expenses we have to pay every year. We have to pay licensing fees for music royalties, and we have to pay our rent. We have to pay our rent for the studio and rent for the antenna.
Insurance.
We have expenses when a computer goes down. We've got to replace some of our equipment. Please, every little bit helps. It doesn't have to be, we don't have huge, you know, millionaire sugar daddies. So every little bit helps, whatever you can afford. And if you'd like to get involved with the station, maybe have your own program or come on our public access hour, where you don't have to make a commitment to a program every week, but you can just come on and speak your piece for an hour, and we can help you with the...
with all the engineering.
Yep. And just click on the participate button after you've donated.
Yes. And you are listening to WFMP LP in Louisville, Kentucky, 106.5 FM, grassroots community radio. We're also live streaming at www.forwardradio.org. I'm your host, Ruth Newman, during this special annual Pledge Drive edition, here with John Ballier, who is a jazz DJ at our sister community station here in Louisville, WXOX 97.1.
also with my lovely co-host, Victoria Strange. And we're having this wide-ranging conversation on the history of low-power, non-commercial community radio, what it means to our community, to our democracy, and to us personally. So let's get back to the conversation with John Ballier.
Tell me a little bit about the variety of programming on your station.
Well, let's see. We have
a big variety.
We do. And then we have wonderful local music shows. Mm-hmm. A couple of those. Bob Klein has a wonderful show called Retro Forward. And then Overtones, I think it's called. And Terra Firma with Mike Logsdon. Yeah. Local music.
Yeah.
Bob Klein's isn't all local music, but Michael Logsdon's got a fabulous show with local music.
Most of our shows, though, are talk.
Well, Ruth has a wonderful show called Election Connection with vital information about our elections on both a local, state, and national level.
And we invite you to submit proposals for local programs, too. We have a program called Critical Thinking for Everyone, which I highly recommend. Another one called Economic Update. And these are both two professors who have the critical thinking show, and another economics professor who has the economics show, another an environmental PhD who has a show called Sustainability Now, which I really, really like to listen to, and he gives you calendars of events going on in town at the end of his show. We have one called Perks of Being a Book Lover. If you're interested in reading, this is definitely the show.
It's a wonderful show. I love that.
Yes.
Because I'm such a... I always have my nose in a book.
Then there's one called My Old Kentucky Podcast, which concentrates on what's going on with the legislature and the politics in Frankfurt. Another one, K.A. Owens' show called On the Edge with K.A. Owens. Yeah, and that is a variety show. It can be political, it can be social, cultural.
He has a lot of great interviews.
Yeah, many interviews.
Community activists and other folks.
One that's called Solutions to Violence. And they have a lot of good guests on.
And then there's the Kentuckians for Single-Payer Healthcare.
Right.
They're also a community partner of our station, and they have a wonderful show.
Yes, and they have a lot of medical people on that show who can give good medical information. And then we have shows on psychology, shows on the universe. We forgot Bench Talk, and that's a show on science, given by a science professor.
We are a Pacifica affiliate, so we have Pacifica programs, and I just heard a marvelous one on the way over here about, it's called Fighting for Democracy.
I believe Victoria was referring to a show called Keeping Democracy Alive, which you can hear every Saturday at 10 a.m.
And it was all about how capitalism has kind of gone off the rails, but could be made more friendly to the public interest. It was fascinating.
So we do have a lot of variety, and we're always looking for more voices. So please come to www.forwardradio.org and click on participate. And while you're at it, click on donate to our pledge drive. Thank you. And then we're having a party, I must tell you. Come to that. Featuring Charles Booker. It's going to be this coming Saturday, April the 13th, 5 o'clock at the Logan Street Market. And there's going to be lots of stuff going on, music, dancing, birthday cake, silent auction. We're going to be having a virtual visit from our sister city radio station from across the Atlantic called East Leeds Community Radio Station. So you won't want to miss it. Logan Street Market.
Let me tell you a story about Pacifica Radio, because there was a time when we lived in California, and my kids, Sarah was born in 82, and Max was born in 85, and on a Saturday morning, we used to listen to the Pacifica station, and they had a local gospel show from 6 to 9. With Emmett Powell, and Emmett Powell used to play just wonderful church music, but African-American church music. Following Emmett Powell, we used to listen to Johnny Otis, And if you don't know who Johnny Otis is, Johnny Otis was a drummer back in the day. He was Greek, but he really adopted a African-American kind of a lifestyle and lived in the African-American sections of the towns where he lived. Johnny Otis used to have a caravan of people who would be part of his show. Little Esther was one of them. There were some great blues singers who used to go with Johnny Otis as part of the Johnny Otis show. Johnny Otis not only played the drums, but he also played the vibraphone. And his son, Shuggy, is a fabulous guitarist. So he used to have a show. If the gospel show was from 6 to 9, the Johnny Otis show was from 9 to 11. And his theme song, it basically uses the Bo Diddley beat. So my kids would wake up on a Saturday morning and they would hear first all that gospel music, and then they would hear Johnny Otis and all of the people that would come on his show. And not surprisingly, they're both musicians now.
Amazing.
Yeah. Sarah's in a band that travels still, and they've been working since 2000. Max was in a group called the Ladybirds, and they worked as a backup band for Wanda Jackson, who is a, you know, kind of a Nashville sound. But he's busy now in the restaurant business.
I have two girls, born in 82 and 85.
Oh, my. Okay. Well, you know.
When you said that, I'm like, oh, they're the same age as my kids.
Absolutely. You know, and quite frankly, they grew up with radio. And they grew up with music. And boy, does that pay dividends.
It sure does.
And
it
speaking really does. Of that, one of the things that I read in this book about Ginny Welsh was that was one of the reasons that she started community radio. Because here she was in Nashville, the center of music.
Yes. Country music, yeah.
And all they heard on the radio, all the radio stations were owned by just one or two companies, corporate media, and they never heard anything local from Nashville. And she was so angered by that. And that was one reason why she started community radio.
And there is a ton of talent in Nashville. And
yeah. Probably a lot of those folks that's
never get on the air.
Another reason we need local.
Playing in the clubs or the, you know, they're playing at local venues. But
yeah.
It's much harder, I think, to break through now than it used to be.
There's a book called The Temples of Sound. And one of the temples of sound is in Nashville. And it's not just country and western.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, that's where Nina Simone used to make a lot of her records.
So Low Power FM started in the late 1980s, and it was started in Chicago. It was a neighborhood called Springfield, and there was this guy who was legally blind. His name is Mbana Kantako, and I don't know how to pronounce it. I'm sure I'm destroying it. M-B-A-N-N-A, Mbana Kantako. He was a public housing resident, and he was so angered at how his fellow black neighbors and apartment dwellers were being treated by the police that he finagled a way of having low power. And he broadcast to a very small, I think he only had like 20 watts, so it was like only to his apartment complex. And he had a show called Human Rights Radio, which started to get very, very popular. Oh, and I also wanted to add that I saw a picture of him online, and he was wearing a t-shirt, and the t-shirt had 106.5 FM, which happens to be our station.
Our frequency.
Yeah,
he had the same frequency. That's amazing.
So he was shut down by the FCC because of a lot of commercial stations complaining about him. And they raided his studio in 1993 and shut him down. He was fined $20,000. It was either him or Stephen Dunifer.
Don't they call that a pirate radio station?
Because
you don't have a license.
That's right, pirate radio. Yeah, And ever since that time, the National Association of Broadcasters has been lobbying. And from 1998 to 2004, they spent over $222 million lobbying Congress and the FCC to make sure that they had no competition from, you know, low-power FM, because that was what was happening back then. All of these stations were popping up. These low-power FM stations were popping up. They started in Illinois.
People were taking back the airwaves.
Yes, which was such a good thing for democracy. But we still, because of the Telecommunications Act of 1996, we have only a few owners of all of our media, and I have most of them listed here: Disney, GE, News Corporation, Sony, Time Warner, and Viacom. And I think there have been other mergers and acquisitions too,
possibly,
so that it just gets concentrated into fewer and fewer hands, which means more and more and more layoffs for the newsrooms.
And less and less investigative journalism, because then you might actually be investigating the owner of your media outlet, and that can't be.
As they should be investigating.
As it should be, but that can't be in their world.
Yeah. And so, there's a fellow by the name of Petri Dish. I don't know quite how to pronounce it. That's probably not right. It's Pete Tridish, T-R-I-D-I-S-H. who started Radio Mutiny, and he operated off of 20 watts too, just for his neighborhood. And he said, I have a quote from him, "All of our friends thought that we were like total losers. We blew up a number of amplifiers trying to set up the studio, but we made it." And he had a lot of unconventional news, talk, community programs. He also had a former prison inmate who hosted a show that examined the criminal justice system. And those are the kinds of things that local people can do, you know, instead of having it be all commercially owned and always the bottom line being your only motivation. This was people who were really interested in the public good, in public interest broadcasting, which is why we have to keep community radio stations on the air.
So. Well, you know, the other thing, it's important that they be nonprofits too.
Yes, exactly.
Because the more that you involve somebody that's going to pay your bills for you, mm-hmm. the more they want to influence what you put out on the air.
Right.
So you need the freedom that the public can give you by contributing, as opposed to somebody with, you know, a corporation that can give you lots of money if you do it their way.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
And the public generally doesn't tell us how to run our show. They give us money because they like the programming that they're listening to.
And if they do want to give you feedback, they reach an open ear, unlike rinse attempts. That's the thing, you have a relationship with people
who
support you.
Yeah.
If you say something, go on our website and either click participate or click contact, you will get a response within the next 48 hours or at the most 3 days. But usually you get a response on that day, because that's what we're all about, is our community and empowering our community. And here is a quote from Petri Dish from Radio Mutiny. And he said, "Radio Mutiny has set out to prove that volunteers with a passion for culture and with vital direct interest in civic affairs can make better programming than the mega corporations controlling the majority of media outlets."
Just tune in to a community radio station and you'll see the truth of that statement.
Yeah.
Because you're going to hear things that are unlike anything you might hear if you tune in to AM radio, for instance, you know, one of the clear channel stations. You're going to hear less polished, perhaps, but that's all part of community radio.
Yes.
Isn't that what a Petri dish is actually designed to do?
Yes, exactly.
That's why.
I think that's so interesting that he tweaked his name like that. And wasn't he instrumental in getting Prometheus started?
Yes, and we met him and we encountered Prometheus when we would go to those media reform conferences. And Prometheus was originally Radio Mutiny, I think. And they were blocked by the FCC because of the influence of commercial media. They were blocked from ever again being able to have a radio station because they had a pirate station.
Yeah.
So that was what motivated him to form Prometheus, which ended up being an organization that helped community radio stations all over the country form. And they were the ones that helped Ginny Welsh in Nashville
start hers. Yeah, they're a wonderful resource.
Yes, they provided the engineers, the volunteers, the encouragement.
Information,
yes.
Which you don't have as someone who's just interested, but you haven't been in the business, you haven't been in the radio business. And even if you have been in radio business like our Bob Klein, it's very different on a, you know, shoestring budget at a small community radio station. It's not the same.
And they got all kinds of different groups together, because that's the whole idea of community radio, is see the groups that are not being represented, like, for example, Indigenous Americans or Black Americans or school kids having their own radio station.
Young people.
Or migrant workers or immigrants, you know, and that's what they did. They went all over the country and they helped different groups of people who had messages that they wanted to get out, and in different languages, not just in English.
Yeah, so, wonderful resource.
Yeah, and the other thing is that these little community stations, thanks to people like Sharon Scott, are starting to form networks and have national conferences together and share with each other, which I think is marvelous, because this is where the people are at the grassroots. They're not in corporate, you know, boardrooms. They're out in society, and this is another public space that has been taken over mostly by corporate media, but it's a public space where we can have town hall meetings, where we can discuss issues, and those public spaces over the years have been eroded away. We don't have them anymore. We don't have that many town hall meetings.
Well, the internet was supposed to be the next great public town hall. I mean, it's wonderful.
But it's got problems, and that's another thing.
Wonderful sides and its bad sides.
It's no longer got net neutrality, which was another issue that was raised at all of these conferences that we went to. And net neutrality meant that everybody can get on the internet and can say their piece on the internet without having to jump through a whole bunch of hoops. But net neutrality...
Or pay a lot of money to be... available and fast and
exactly. But if you go on the website now and you type in something in a search engine, the first thing you're going to see is ads all up and down, because those people pay money, and that's what we don't have. We don't have equality of our communications thoroughfare, which the internet should be. And we also have these insidious algorithms that create all of this antagonism and anger and tribalism in the worst sense, because these algorithms put people in these silos now. And so there are all sorts of things that I think are sabotaging what the internet could be and isn't. But of course, the radio station now, the community radio station like WXOX, and
which
like,
was an internet station.
Yes.
That's what
still?
I mean. There's so many great things happening on the internet, too. But then at the same time, it can be used to spread disinformation like wildfire.
Yes, yes.
So, I don't know. It's a conundrum.
It is.
Here is my comment on that. Try to imagine what it would be like to be traveling down our roadways if they were owned privately for the sole purpose of enriching owners and shareholders. That is exactly what we have with the internet, our biggest communications thoroughfare, and it is controlled by two or three private giant internet service providers and a couple of major search engines. Now, how did this come about? back in the George W. Bush era, when all these hundreds of millions of dollars were being spent by lobbyists to keep out any attempt at community broadband and to ensure monopoly control of the internet, here is what then FCC Chairman Michael Powell had to say, and this is a quote. He said, "Monopoly is not illegal in the U.S. People tend to forget this. There is something healthy about letting innovators try to capture markets." And Powell also admitted to being utterly clueless about what was meant by public interest. As a result, Americans pay about 40% more on average for internet service than folks in other countries, including France, Japan, Israel, Germany, South Korea, and the Scandinavian countries. And instead of protocols that promote civil discourse, what we've got here are algorithms that drop people into echo chambers and rampant surveillance technologies that harvest our internet behavior and sell to the highest bidder. I hope you'll pardon my little outburst. Now on with the three-way conversation with John Ballier, jazz DJ at our sister radio station, WXOX 97.1. Victoria Strange, my co-host, and me, Ruth Newman. I'm about to try comparing our current internet with the undeveloped brain of a newborn.
And in one talk that I gave, I related it to a newborn baby. The newborn baby has all these nerves in the brain. And actually, when it starts to develop, the nerves start to branch off and prune themselves back. They start out with a whole lot more
neurons.
Yes, I think that's what it is. Then they end up with. And the whole process is pruning away so that they get what's essential and what they need to know. And I think we're right now in the baby stage of the internet and communications.
Yeah.
And we've got all this junk, misinformation going on. And our goal is to prune it back into what is really essential and human and in the public interest. So I think our radio station is trying to do that because, you know, we have to abide by FCC rules, which the internet doesn't have to, so that if you want to be on the air, you have to abide by certain rules. And we give those rules to you right from the very beginning so you know. So it becomes more respectable, more sound information, and it's not just blurting out whatever you feel like.
Well, you know, and the fact that we're able to get funding because of the fact that it's a station that's different than the commercial stations, mm-hmm. and has more variety mm-hmm. available. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to look at the positive side of how we as groups can change the way people get their news, people get their, mm-hmm. their music, people get their yeah. talk shows, and the things that they talk about are more relevant to mm-hmm. bettering their lives
instead of culture war issues, sort of being viciously attacking
one another,
yes.
and which mm-hmm. unfortunately we do quite well.
We do very well.
we don't need to do it on the radio.
No.
And we shouldn't, and fortunately we don't.
No.
Yeah. And the other thing that we don't do, which commercial media does all the time, is they just have these freeze frames. It's almost shock and awe when you listen to the news. It is so jarring because they go from one thing to another thing. You never really quite understand the context or the history because they just, you know, they don't have time. They don't have the money for any kind of investigation. So
well,
they just give
that
you...
That takes money.
Yes.
Well, they have plenty of money. I mean, but to do a really sound investigative report in some cases, I'm sure would take months.
Mm-hmm.
And so unless you're a media organization with a lot of bucks and you want to devote it mm-hmm. to finding out what's really going on at this big company or what's really going on mm-hmm. in this particular government agency or what's really going on with these, you know, links between some entity in government and a foreign country or whatever. That takes a lot of time and effort.
Yeah, it's so much easier to just show all the blood and gore.
Yeah.
And that's what they do, and they call that the news.
Yeah, and if it bleeds, it leads. Remember that old saying?
Yes.
And then again, there's the, you know, there's the issue of how difficult it is to uncover where the money is coming from, especially in our political life. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are all these entities. There are different ways that you can hide the names of your donors. You can be a, what is it, a 501(c)(4)?
Yeah.
You never have to disclose the names of your donors, so you can say, oh, well, we're a social, you know, a social purpose organization, or we're an educational organization, but they're not. They're really a front group for
mm-hmm.
maybe a few billionaires who want to see this particular piece of legislation passed.
Yeah, and so that's another reason for community radio is that we don't have the money. We don't have money, but what we are trying to do is empower just regular people. Because that's what made this country great. It wasn't money. It was the connections that people had with each other, which we need to reestablish. And it just reminded me that one of the sessions in the media reform conference that we went to, I thought was so cute. I wrote it down. It was United Citizens versus Citizens United. And that's what I think we need to start thinking about, is how to form organizations and communities and networks of people through various vehicles like community radio.
Exactly.
Which is why you need to support us by going to www.forwardradio.org and clicking on the donate to our pledge drive. Thank you for listening to this conversation with Victoria Strange, my occasional co-host and one of the founders of this station, John Ballier,
yeah,
who is a DJ at WXOX 97.1.
Yes.
Is that right?
Correct.
Yes.
FM.
Our sister community radio station here in Louisville. So I'm so pleased that you came on the station, John, and I hope that this will be the beginning of more collaborations between the two stations.
I hope so, too.
That was John Ballier, jazz DJ for WXOX 97.1 FM, our sister community radio station in Louisville, along with Victoria Strange and myself, Ruth Newman, hosting this special pledge drive edition of Election Connection on our very own WFMP low power community radio at 106.5 FM, also live streaming at www.forwardradio.org. If you can appreciate the moment that we're living in with the largest economic inequalities ever between the rich and poor, then perhaps you will also appreciate the counter force of ordinary people's voices being amplified over the publicly owned airwaves, and you'll consider donating to community radio. Just go to www.forwardradio.org. There you will see our Donate to Our Pledge Drive link. And please don't miss our big birthday celebration coming right up Saturday, April 13th, the Logan Street Market from 5 to 8 p.m. Special guest, Charles Booker. Special virtual guests, East Leeds Community Radio Station in Leeds, England. Plus, live music, dancing, food vendor discounts, birthday cake, and a silent auction. This is Ruth Newman. We'll see you there. And thanks for listening to
Election Connection.